challenge to people as we think about this today. So in this Sun Grant Department of Energy project that we're working on, what we're trying to, we're working with groups of engineers who assume that A plus B equals C. And what we're what we're trying to do is to point out to folks that in the biological systems that we're working with, that you can't always count on that. And so we're trying to look at across the nation as far as the small grains, the wheat, barley, oats, and look at areas where you could consistently pull residues off for cellulosic use. And one of the underlying, there's so much variation from year to year that you can't say anything specifically, but we're trying to move to large generalizations to say if we know general yields in these areas and we've got these kind of harvest index, so we can assume this amount of residue is out there. And then the other factor we're trying to get at is how much residue do we have to leave on the ground in a very general sense in order to say we're going to be not severely impacting soil quality. So what I'm looking for in all your presentations is there a magic number that in a very general sense we can say if you're above that level, you know, we're probably okay on an ongoing basis. But we'll come back to that. So. Zero, yeah. So anyway, we'll move on to our next presentation. The next presentation is by Dr. Stephen Machado. Stephen's at the Columbia Basin Ag Research Center in Pendleton, Oregon, the same location as Dr. Galani. And he is the person who has been charged with managing the long-term plots at the Pendleton Station. And so he'll be telling you both about those plots and the soil organic matter dynamics in that system. Stephen.
Thank you, Russ. Like Russ said, like David, I inherited these plots, and I thank those who were before me who made this, who initiated the experiments and collected all this data. Like everybody is saying, I think the production of biofuels from cellulosic materials will entail the removal of crop residues, and that could affect the soil organic matter and sustainability of our cropping systems. We all know that to increase organic matter, the production of organic matter should be greater than the decomposition by microbes and or the loss by erosion. And to follow the trend of organic matter, there's a lot of numerous interactions among plants, soil, water, soil microbes, and the effect of cropping systems on these interactions is, you know, takes quite a long time to show, and this is where the long-term plots come into effect, and this is where we really need the use of the long-term plots. Likewise, to ascertain the effects of residue removal on soil organic matter dynamics and soil productivity, we need these long-term plots data, and this data is quite scant, as you can see. Fortunately, we have these long-term experiments at Pendleton, and dating back to the 1930s, and we have a number of them. I'll describe each one of them before I look at the soil organic matter dynamics. We have the grass pasture initiated in 1931. We've got a continuous cropping cereal, 31 also, and adjusting to that, we also initiated continuous no-till cereal in 1998. So this could be where we could come to our station for this information. And this, so we also have wheat pea rotation, residue management, started in 1931. Dr. Hiro Golani talked about this a little bit. And we've got the tillage fertility and the no-till. The residue management and the tillage fertility are both summer fallows. So we're growing one crop in 2 years, including this also, this no-till here. Just quickly going through the grass pasture. This is a perennial grassland site. that contains no experimental variables. We're just using it to as a baseline for evaluating changes in other cultivated cropping systems. We periodically reseed the grass, occasionally fertilize it, or frequently irrigate it. But it's a long time since we've done this irrigation. We've just let it to natural rainfall. The grass species which are dominant there are wheatgrass and Idaho fescue. It used to be grazed in the 1930s. That was the practice then. But since 85, it has not been grazed. But sometimes we clip it because of a lot of growth in some of the summer seasons. Now I go to the summer fallow crop residue experiment, which Dr. Hiro has talked about a little bit. We have residue treatments here where we add manure and pea vines. We also have disking treatments. This was during this period here. There were some disking and burning, fall burning, spring burning, and no burning treatments with different nitrogen rates. And the treatments changed a little bit in this period from 67 to 78. Again, some burning, no burning, and nitrogen levels. From 79 to the present, we have spring burning treatments, no burning treatments, fall burning, in combination with nitrogen treatments from 0 to 80. So we'll look at the almost similar graph like what Dr. Hiro showed you. And we have soil carbon here and the years, except for the manure treatment, which is kind of maintaining the soil organic matter, the rest of the treatments, zero nitrogen, 40, 80, pea vines, fall burn, we're all losing organic matter. The burn part is the worst. That is the line below here. So for this summer fallow cropping system, which is the predominant cropping system in the Pacific Northwest, we cannot afford to take away any residue for biofuels. Here I just pulled up some data to show the residues we're putting back. This is the total dry matter, this is the bundle yield, this is the grain yield, straw yield, and we've got our nitrogen here on the side, pea treatment and manure treatment, and the burn and no burn treatments. As you can see, as you increase your nitrogen rates, you increase your total biomass production. The pea rate was also really good. It was actually equivalent to the 40 nitrogen. The manure the most total dry matter production. Similar situation, similar trend with the grain yield. Increase your nitrogen rates, increase your grain yields. The pea also was very competitive with 40 pounds N. Manure at the highest grain yield. Fall burn, burning, removing, it is totally removing this residue at the lowest. Same situation with the straw, manure having the highest amount of straw and increasing the nitrogen rates, increasing the straw yield. But when you looked at the organic matter, which we recently sampled in 2005, the increasing of fertilizer rates did not seem to affect the soil organic matter there, despite the increase in the total dry matter production. It's only when we had applied manure, that's when we had the highest organic matter retention in the soil. Fall burn was the lowest. I go again to another summer fallow experiment, and again we're growing one crop here in 2 years. This one involves tillage and nitrogen treatments, moldboard plow, offset disc sweep, and these are some of the residues remaining in the surface after just before we seed. So when you moldboard plow, remaining with very little, the highest cover is under disc, followed by the sweep. We had Narogen treatments, and they changed within these periods, but from 1989 to the present, we have 0, 40, 80, 120, and 160 pounds per acre. Like David, I also present this data to the growers, and sometimes I forget to change the units. Now let's look at the organic matter in these plots. For all the plots, we're losing organic matter. This is just data, I have data from 1985 to 2005. We are losing data in all the systems. And more so with the plow. The plow is the we're losing more organic matter with the mobile plow, followed by the sweep and the disc. So this is just in percentages, and I wanted to look at the lower depth. In this situation, we haven't got much change in the sweep and the plow, except for the disc. Again, I tried to look at the biomass production and try to correlate that with the organic carbon. If you look at your nitrogen treatment, if you increase your nitrogen, you increase your organic matter, your total biomass, you increase your yield, you increase your straw dry matter. But again, we didn't have any effect on the carbon as affected by the nitrogen treatment. And I think this is because we are just putting, no matter how much we increase our organic matter, our biomass here, we are just putting that amount in 2 years. And when we look at the tillage effects, 89 to 2003 period, the plow is giving us more biomass production, followed by the disc and the sweep. The plow is also giving us more yield than the other systems, and more straw yield than the other systems. But when you look at the organic matter, the plow is giving us the lowest amount of organic carbon compared to the disc and the sweep. Looks like the disc is doing better than the other systems. And this shows you the effect of incorporating the residues and exposing them to soil microbes. Now we go to the continuous cereals. So we have continuous winter wheat, continuous spring wheat, and continuous spring barley, starting from the 1930s. And we changed the nitrogen variables a little bit in these periods, but from 1993 to the present, we're having an unfertilized control and 80 pounds per acre, and the same applies to the spring wheat and the spring barley. So we are growing crops here annually. Now, just a quick look at the results. Here I'm comparing, this is just looking at the profile, soil profile here, down the profile. Here is our summer wheat, summer fallow treatment. And there's the grass pasture. So these are the kind of the two extremes. And the blue line is the continuous winter wheat. The yellow line is the spring barley, continuous barley, and the green is the spring wheat. As you can see, even if you are tilling your soil, but intensifying your cropping, I mean growing your crop every year, it looks like you can still accumulate some carbon or maintain carbon. The black layer here is the 1931 layers. So we are in the mix here with these other cropping systems. We're close to those original levels here, except that the distribution is the one which has been changed. Because we're plowing the residues into the plow layer here, we have this bulge here for this system. But if you add the whole profile, it looks like we are maintaining organic matter even if we're tilling, but just because we're putting in biomass every year. So the only difference here is that the problem is we're removing soil organic matter from the surface. And in the end, like here, we plowed down soon after harvest. And you can see the difference. Here we let these, the spring wheat and the spring barley, we plow under in the following spring. So that gives you that kind of a difference there. So if you are doing continuous cropping, it appears that you can accumulate you can maintain at least some of the organic matter. Now we're looking at the continuous cropping, annual cropping but under no-till, spring barley, spring wheat, and spring wheat, and winter wheat. We've got almost similar picture here. We have our grass pasture. We have our summer fallow levels here. This is spring barley, spring wheat, and winter wheat. If I could back up a bit to the other slide, we did not find, we found a very strong correlation between the biomass above ground biomass with the organic matter in the soil because we're incorporating it. But when it came to the no-till, there was completely no correlation between with above ground biomass with organic matter, indicating that it is the rooting mass which is contributing there to the soil organic matter in the soil. And the winter wheat is having more organic matter because it's staying more in the ground and presumably producing more roots. But this experiment was sampled soon after about 6 years. So now we are ready for our next sampling and we'll see where we are with the organic matter. But what it says is that since we don't have any correlation between the above ground mass and the below ground mass, there could be a possibility of harvesting some of the biomass here for other purposes, provided we leave enough for soil erosion control. I was going to jump and show you some of the new experiments we did. We started in Moro, and this is a point which supports what David was talking about. We have a grass pasture. This is a low rainfall area, 12-inch rainfall area. The Pendleton site is 16-inch, so we have got a low productivity, low native grass production here compared to the systems we're producing. So this is our continuous winter wheat. It's already surpassing the native grassland in organic matter. And this is the summer fallow. Conventional tillage, this is fallow, chemical tillage, not till. And even if we're plowing here, we are producing so much dry matter, so much biomass, more than what we get from the no-till, because we're planting a little bit early because of moisture, soil moisture conditions. So we're having a lot more organic matter we are putting in the soil compared to the no-till situation. This one is annual cropping, and we are adding in a lot of organic matter every year. So again, this is just a point just to support what David was saying, that sometimes you go into a system which had inherently low productivity, and if you improve your productivity, you might end up again, you know, actually sequestering more carbon than the original system. Now, just to summarize, removal of residue for the production of biofuels would exacerbate soil organic matter decline, particularly under the conventional tillage wheat fallow system and annual cropping systems. So under these systems, we cannot afford to remove any of the residues. There may be a possibility of harvesting some biomass for biofuel production under the no-till continuous annual cropping system. But again, care should be taken to leave enough for soil organic matter maintenance or increase, and for soil erosion control. We are sorry, Russ, here we don't have the data to answer your question, but I think with more years, we will come up with that figure. So with that, I end my topic, my presentation.
It seems like I'm always the first question. no-till experiments, how much disturbance, in other words, how full was the row spacing and how much disturbance? Was there also a fertilizer injection? You know, if it's a drilled crop, you have a lot more surface disturbance than if you're planting, for example, corn in 30-inch rows with a 1 or a 2-inch slot if you're no-till. If you're in a small grain, you're disturbing that fairly large amount of the surface, much like disking. For the time you have applied fertilizer and then come back and drilled in, you may have disturbed 100% of the surface. And so I personally think that is why you're not seeing the amount of biomass or the amount of organic matter, because you the drilled crops, your small grains, you have a lot more disturbance than with a wider row no-till system. So I think all in all, there's a huge number of different pluses and minuses in this whole system. You know, the amount of biomass going in, the amount of disturbance by the tillage system, the yield of the crop, whether it's irrigated or not. It's like kind of got this container of inputs and outputs, and it depends on what the pluses and minuses are as to what really happens to soil organic matter.
Yes. Yeah, we use what we call a one-pass system.
Okay, one-pass.
One-pass system, very low disturbance of our no-till.
Inches.
12 inches.
12 inches.
Yes. And
so you have a fertilizer shank and a seeding shank?
Sometimes in one shank,
okay.
Dropping fertilizer and seed at the same time.
12 inches, how much of it is disturbed and how much of it has undisturbed soil?
Just about 3 to 4 inches disturbed.
4 inches?
Yeah.
Well,
3.
You're disturbing a third
of
the soil.
But
2 inches on
2 inches. 2 inches.
Four.
Yeah.
Huge difference.
Yeah.
Also depends on what you sample that too. When you're sampling the disturbed area versus the middle. Your sampling protocol points to that.
Yeah, we sample both the raw and in between the raw for the no-till.
That summer fallow study you mentioned that it was really
you guys
no difference.
Got the level?
Well, that summer fallow study mentioned that there's kind of no difference in the soil organic carbon from your different N rates. Are you measuring residual nitrate levels or ammonium levels in your kind of mineralization over time as well? Would that explain some of those results that you saw there?
I know we are getting a response on the yield part of it. Yeah, but then just because it's 1 year we're having a crop, 1 year we don't have a crop. So whatever increase in yield due to the increased nitrogen levels is not making a difference because the other year there's no residues coming in. So it's the fallow system which is, you know, yes. It's,
continuous in the Moro plots, the continuous winter wheat, have you run the economics on that yet? Is there you're showing, you know, that you've got higher organic matters? And
this one, yeah.
Right.
The ironic thing about this study is that this one is low yielding.
Right.
The continuous winter wheat is low yielding. And as a result, that's the, you know, less productive in terms of economics. But in terms of organic matter, because we are growing a crop every year, we are getting an input of biomass into the system every year. That's why we're having more biomass there.
Yeah. So you're getting dry matter production.
Dry matter production.
Because of the rainfall situation, you're just not getting grain fill.
Yes.
You're not getting the yields
right.
Of this.
Yeah.
Just a comment, not a question. I mean, this whole question of, you know, how much fallow you have is obviously really has a very big effect. And I mean, I learned this some years back when I started working with people in North America. I'm used to having, in our system, which is south southern England, we would have continuous winter wheat every year. And so the soil is not bare for very long at all. But when I work with people who are having a spring wheat fallow system, out of 24 months, you've only got something in the ground for a handful of those months. So these, when we sort of transfer conclusions intrusion to one system to the other. We have to be careful. And I thought the point about, you know, the no-till on what you call corn, what I call maize, is a different system to no-till on wheat. And that's a very valid point, I thought. Yeah.
I think just the rainfall, this is a year in a true Mediterranean
type climate
here mm-hmm. as well, so the whole rainfall pattern is totally different than what you'd see in England or in the Midwest as well.
Yeah.
If you use wheat, you probably get some snipping precipitation in the spring, which will get that crop up and growing, but then it kind of cuts it off, and so your yields go way down. So you have bad yields, but you may have some biomass out there to cause that to happen. Is that right?
Say that again.
The residue, the rainfall pattern in your area.
Uh-huh.
So even though you're getting low yields and bad economics on your continuous wheat, that spring rain would still get that, get you burn a large amount of biomass up, respect to leaves and stalks.
Yeah.
And stuff. See, then the yields just get hammered because you don't get any.
Yeah. Yeah.
This is summertime.
Right. This system is a no-till system, so we get a lot of that growth of the roots in the winter wheat, but then because of the we run out of water. So in the end, that system suffers more than the fallow systems in terms of grain, but we have got the roots there.
But the overall amount of revenue going through the system is greater.
Yes.
Yeah.
Right.
The residue grain ratio for spring would be quite different than that.
That's true.
In these systems, the old axioms that people use is your first 4 inches of soil stored moisture or rainfall that you've got coming in produces the vegetative matter and then you need
Then when grain starts coming on, there's no water left.
Yeah, there's no water left too. Other questions? We've got a few minutes before we're supposed to keep these to the starting times that are specified so that people can come in and out. Or back to some of the prior presentations.
Well, it sounds like using these small grain systems in the Pacific Northwest to produce cellulose for ethanol just isn't going to be a very workable thing. Is that what your conclusion is?
I think that's probably where it's going. But well, it'd be irrigated too, but you know, if you're already in equilibrium under a system that's been there for 100 years or whatever, and you start moving residue, you may then start losing organic carbon. I think the studies I was showing, they were under a low input system then moved to irrigated.
And
so they were increasing it to the equilibrium point. And when they got to that point and started moving residue, they start going down again. So
to remove.
And there's other effects too. You know, I didn't show this data, but there's data showing that even though there's increase in organic carbon no matter what you do, you're affecting saturated hydraulic conductivity, aggregation's changing, water filtration's different, and that is being affected when you remove the residue. So that there's other effects that are not showing up here. So I'd be very apprehensive over the long term using a lot of residue. Maybe every so often, maybe, but every year.
But
in those systems too, they also raise potatoes, and so they don't have the option of doing no-till. They have huge soil disturbances if they're raising sugar beets or potatoes every 2-3 years, and so that's different than these continuous wheat systems I was showing as well. So that also puts another wrench in the engine here. That is something that would show put some caution flags up with respect to that.
But there are areas in the glutes that are making 10 megatons of grain per year, which is a tremendous amount of straw. And they actually have problems trying to move the straw to get back into the seeding operation. So it is crop dependent, area dependent, rainfall dependent.
Tillage system dependent.
I think if you're producing enough of that, like 10, get that much residue, then you can't afford to take some of it off.
Absolutely.
You know, but you're into a 20 to 24 inch rainfall too.
Yeah, it's different.
It's that big balance thing you're just talking about.
was no magic number. It depends.
Also, I'd like to point out one thing. Also, in Panisse area, we have these hills. Probably we'll have another factor. We cannot remove
erosion rate.
Erosion rate. So you cannot maybe some spot in the lower depression area you could remove, but not on the shoulder of the hill slope. And this is a problem. We cannot generalize how much residue we're going to remove.
Yeah, I've advocated that if we actually do get into a scenario where farmers are selling residue, that there be a conservation plan prepared on each field that specifies the amount of wear within the field, and if carbon be evaluated, if wind erosion be evaluated, water erosion be evaluated, and that plan specifically outline the part of the field and how much, and not just, you know, a whole farm can remove 80% or whatever, that would be terrible. There will be certain areas, flatter soils. I would think Champaign County, Illinois, there'd be some areas of firmer planting and soils that probably could have some corn still removed.
There's a big logistical problem with this, though, and that is that if you build a plant, it's got to have its whatever tons per day and every year and every day of every year. And we've got variable production high, but still variable. And you would have to think that a model like that would have to say, well, if you don't get very good yields in a year, then you can't take any off. And where is your custom harvester going to be then?
Yeah.
And the other logistical problem is that, you know, we don't have any good weather right now to even harvest the crops. Going out and cutting up fields to harvest $50 worth of stover is just really not making.
Perhaps those that site these plants ought to consider maybe a little bit more than what they have been.
The problem with siting these things is this is low density stuff to carry up and down the road, so you can't have a 100-mile command area.
Oh, that's right. Black stocks on the
ground. One more question or comment.
Yeah, I propose that agronomy leads the siting of these plants. There will be no plant sited unless the agronomic assessment is made.
Yeah.
All in favor?
To work with those engineers is just like to take A plus B equals C, right?
I can tell you later where we're at with some of this in the thought process, and it's along that line. So our next speaker is Emerson Noftzinger. Emerson is an agronomist, professor of agronomy at the University of Illinois Urbana, and he has worked with the Moro plots and is so going to tell us about soil carbon organic trends over 100 years in the Moro plots.